Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Welcome to Concussion Talk Podcast. I'm Nick Mercer. And before I talk to my guest, my good friend, Dr. Christian Goulet, who is a pediatric sports medicine and concussion specialist, about his practice and also about the paper he wrote along with colleague Dr. Suzanne Benoit entitled Sport-Related Concussion and Body Checking in Children and Youth, Evaluation Management and Policy Implications. So we will talk about that. If you didn't understand me, then you'll hear it again from in the journey to our interview. But first, I want to thank my sponsor, HeadCheck Health. HeadCheck Health bridges gaps in concussion care through simple, powerful technology. Join organizations like the Canadian Football League, Trek Factory Racing, the Canadian Junior Hockey League, Eastern Washington University, and Volleyball Canada. Rely on HeadCheck to improve communications and optimize care. Visit HeadCheckHealth.com for more. And thank you again to HeadCheck Health for being my sponsor for the last three years now, and they've been great, so please check them out. And also, to support this podcast, you can subscribe, rate, view, wherever you get your podcasts, Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, YouTube. I'm probably missing something. I'm missing a lot. And also, please check out to help support the show. Check out the advertisers on my website, concussiontalk.com. And thank you so much. Without further ado, here is my interview with Dr. Christian Goulet. Okay, I'm with Dr. Christian Goulet now. He's a child of pediatric sports concussion specialist. Is that adequate? Is that enough? Is that right to say?
I'm a pediatric pediatrician first, and I did a sports medicine fellowship years ago in Boston, and so I do a lot of pediatrics, a lot of head injury, a lot of mental health in Ottawa, Canada.
Great. Well, that's exactly why he's here. Not to mention, he's a good friend of mine from university, and we haven't talked. We were just talking briefly before we started recording that. Last time he was on was episode 2, and my first guest, the first podcast has been me. And so there's been 148 episodes of Concussion Talk podcast, plus all the other ones I've done, but 148 episodes, and this is episode 150 now. So it's been a while. Amazing. Since we've had a concussion chat, although you're here in St. John's, in 2017, did very concussion conference. I forget exactly what it was about.
Yeah, I was doing a talk for Hockey Canada about
right. We had
for dinner. I remember that.
Yeah.
At that restaurant used to be a bank. Remember that?
Yeah, Merchant Tavern. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a big tavern. Not tavern. It's a nice spot. But it's like, yeah. There used to be Bank of Montreal, I think.
Yeah. But no, you've done amazing things since that first interview years and years ago. Oh. So you know, congratulations to you and all your success.
Thanks.
Definitely want to get some of that concussion talk swag. I'll order some later after our video
chat. Thanks. Appreciate that. That's awesome. And I guess so you were, I'll just chat about your first few and all while you're where I lived in Ottawa for a bit when Goulet wasn't there. I'll call him Goulet, bit of a habit, but it's Dr. Christian Goulet for everyone else. But
Goulet's fine.
You were in Ottawa when I was there. You were at school or doing a fellowship, but or working elsewhere. But where do you work in Ottawa now?
So in Ottawa, I'm in. I work at with the University of Ottawa Brain and Mind Research Institute. I do a lot of work with the Canadian Pediatric Society, hence this paper. And I work in the community and with children and affiliated with the Children's Hospital of Eastern Ontario. My main clinic is out in Kanata, which is about 15 minutes outside of Ottawa.
That's your hometown. When Kinger and I were on our bike trip, we stayed at Eagle River one night there in Canada. We drove from Kingston to Canada, and then we stopped by everybody said your parents gave us a great barbecue of burgers and or what else, fries, those corn.
I had forgotten about that. That was amazing.
And Nick and Courtney came over, and we chatted for it, and then that night went to that bar near, it's all changed now, but there's a O'Reilly's or some of that, or like, I forget. I did my shirts in my journal somewhere.
Well, that was a different life, eh?
Yes, it was a different life. But now this life, I wanted to talk to you about, dear, this, okay, it's not a scientific article, it's a position, policy position statement. For the pediatric CBA, Canadian Pediatric Society. It's called, the title is Sport-related Concussion and Body Checking. Pause, slow down. I get excited and I speak quickly. Sport-related concussion and body checking in children and youth. Evaluation, management, and policy implications. So you basically want to know about how to treat, manage youth, not children. So you was because I know 18-year-olds and 17-year-olds get offended if I call them children, but that's what the label is. So how to manage concussions in youth, and what do you think are the main? I read the paper and I read the abstract. Anyone can read the paper and the abstract is all fully there on the website. On the Canadian Pediatric Society website, so they can find that. But what do you think are the main takeaways from your paper? But you researched beforehand.
So it was many years in the making, this paper. So the Canadian Pediatric Society, they are kind of like the godfathers of pediatric health in this country. And the last time they wrote a position paper on concussions and head injuries, way back in 2013, and as we all know, the landscape in concussion research has changed dramatically, in the last 10 years or so. So with the Canadian Pediatric Society, I work on the Injury Prevention Committee, and it was tasked with us is to every 10 years for a lot of different topics we have to re-up, right? And so they asked me to kind of take the reins of this. The American Academy of Pediatrics a few years ago had updated their policy, and at the time, for concussions, the body contact age, in 2013, we said, kind of at least peewee age, and years and
peewee,
years ago.
Peewee is what, 12, 13?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And so body contact around that age. And then the Americans, they started reviewing the data a few years ago and said, well, geez, a lot of injuries can be prevented by, taking out some of the body contact. When I started, medicine 15 years ago, I thought, I was of the other camp. And I thought that, the earlier you introduce body contact, the more you learn, how to take a check and how to give a check. And but, you know, over the course of 15 years, you know, I've definitely, you know, had my mind change. And
yeah,
that's what it's a very polarizing topic, as you know, Nick, with but even, you know, with body contact, but even with, you know, concussions as a whole, I think that you have those two different camps. There's such a dichotomy between the two. There's such an, I think you always have to have a very healthy, you know, respect for concussions that some people don't have. And I think that you have to, you know, have an open mind. I always say that when you approach a topic, it's best to be, you know, have a mindset of an experimenter, of a scientist, and not of a lawyer. A lawyer knows the outcome of the case, and they try to find, they try to find proof to support their notions. Whereas a researcher gathers all the, you know, applicable information, and then they make a decision. And I think, you know, the more you look through the literature about body contact, and what we'll talk about more here is the hockey side of things. Like, the literature couldn't be, you know, more definitive that as soon as you introduce body contact, injury rates go up, concussion rates go up. And conversely, when they have made some changes in body contact age, you could see like how the body contact, you know, how eliminating the body contact has done wonders in terms of, you know, decreasing injury rates, in kids in hockey.
Yeah, no, I think it's, I know in the States, like there's been, I think even, I don't know, say Brett Favre, but like some big name athletes have said that they don't want their children playing contact football. They want their children playing, say, like flag football. It's just, no, they think contact football below period age is not needed. So, and I think it'd be great to have somebody, big name hockey player say something similar. It just seems to hockey to be a bit behind the NFL. You know, the NFL, even though in the States, it seems that the NFL is so big, so huge there.
It's monstrous. And they have so much sway and power. And
I think you see
the tackle, you know, football, you see these little clips here and there too of these little, you know, 7-year-olds getting thrown to the ground. And I'm like, well, you know, I do believe in the, you know, the resiliency of our brains and can do, you know, wonders in terms of recovery. But, you know, every hit like that, I mean, it can add up and it can have significant impacts. And then, so you look at, you know, the purpose of contact in sport, and I think the one side of the argument, I do agree, I do see a point where their body contact, you know, and body checking, I do think that they do hold a place, you know, in the sport. It's just, you know, to what level. And I think that the amount of contact that you can limit, you know, is going to be obviously key. The less body contact, the less body checking that you have, is obviously the better. But it does, you know, at some stage have a role, you know, in hockey. And the question is, you know, where can we limit the amount of body contact? I think one way that you limit body contact is, you know, obviously in practice. I think you can teach techniques with body contact, but to have full-fledged body checking in practice isn't very reasonable. I think the longer you can delay introducing body checking to a degree is better. Wait for these bodies to physically mature. And you look at the differences, you know, in kids and their growth and development. You know, a 13-year-old, you know, some 13-year-old kids, you know, they haven't gone through that big growth spurt yet. It's like, you know, completely different than some of the other 13-year-olds that can be like, you know, a foot taller and you know, 30 heavier. And to put these guys and say go at it and hit each other, I mean, that's putting, you know, some kids at a great disadvantage. And I think, you know, and I think the other thing that we had mentioned in that paper is, you know, how integral is body checking in non-competitive leagues, what we call the non-elite leagues, so the house league. Do you really need, you know, body checking at that age? Does it really change the, you know, the is it needed for the outcomes of the games? Is it needed? Does it, you know, does it taking it out, does it really change the nature of the non-competitive games? And again, there's some good studies coming out of there saying that, well, if you do, you know, limit body checking to the, you know, to the more elite competitive leagues and at the higher age levels, you know, 15 above, then you can do, you know, can do well by a lot of these players and limit the amount of concussions and injuries that they get.
Yeah, exactly. No, that's good, because I mean, we kind of talking about mitigation more than say prevention, because prevention is, as you know, basically impossible. I mean, I don't say impossible is bad for teams, but like, you know, it's in prevention, you're not going to stop concussions from happening, because as you said, the 80-90% of TBIs, I mean, it's mentioned in the paper, are concussion. And
yeah,
to prevent concussion just in general life, then concussions will happen. And one of the important aspects now are also mitigation, of course, but diagnosis, prevention, and treatment. So which one do you think they're all, sorry, obviously all equal, I was going to say that, but like, do talk about diagnosis, do you think the major steps toward better diagnosis of these, of children, of youth, playing would change the best way of diagnosing these conditions are?
Great question. So, well, I think, yeah, you look at it in those different aspects, right? So, you know, ideally, you know, concussions don't happen, but we know, you know, concussions are going to happen, right? They can happen with sports, happen outside of sports. So you do want to limit the concussions as best you can. We got some dogs barking in the background.
I can't hear them.
Oh, you can't? Oh, perfect. So, they're right.
They're right there. They can't hear much.
Okay.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Okay. So first is prevention. And I think, you know, one of the biggest things is increasing awareness, right? And that has, you know, people like you, Nick, that have been really increasing awareness and really throughout society. There's, you know, 15 years ago, it's night and day about, you know, awareness in terms of concussions. Yeah. We made some great strides there. And I think it's continuing to bring it to awareness. Sorry, hold on one sec.
I hear him now.
So yeah, so awareness, I think it has gone, you know, it's the improvements in awareness has been amazing. I think like when we were younger, Nick, too, when we were playing our sports in high school and everything, like it's night and day since where it was. So again, I think that's the first step is just increasing awareness, which has been wonderful. And then, yeah, the next stage is diagnosing. And I think we've made a lot of strides there. And, you know, it's an inexact science, as you know. There's no blood work, there's no brain imaging that we can really do at this point to diagnose concussion. So, you know, you're left, you know, trying to, you know, correlate symptoms with a head injury. And yeah. I think, you know, that, you know, we talked about the awareness of head injury in the general population. And I think, you know, the awareness of concussions and how to diagnose concussions, you know, with health professionals have come a long way as well. So in Canada, actually, there's a great resource too. So for all professionals, you know, kind of working with concussions, it's called the Pediatric Living Guidelines. And it's the only guidelines that I know.
There are links to this in your paper.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So there's the link there. And so, yeah, so now with that paper too, it's only online content, but they're just doing kind of the translation component. So the paper, the print copy should be out within the next few weeks or so. Yeah, so that's a great resource. It's continually updated, which, you know, most guidelines, you print them and then they're not updated. So they can be out to date, you know, out of date very, very quickly. But this one, papers come in. So I regularly get emails with new papers for me to review that we can use to include in the guidelines. So it's really, really up to date. So, you know, the diagnosis of concussion, it's not the easiest thing, because as you know, there's so many things that can go into diagnosing so many things that go into creating concussion symptoms, right? You know, and in terms of you get hit to the head, but, you know, some people have pre-existing headache issues, pre-existing sleep issues, sometimes stress plays into it. So it's not easy to diagnose concussions. So my advice is always, you know, to err on the side of caution. You know, so Jamie Kissick, really leader in concussion work, he unfortunately passed away just within the last month or two. But I believe he coined the saying, you know, when in doubt, sit them out. So what I find is you do a lot of the kids that have some of the most difficult time recovering from a head injury are the ones that, you know, not that first concussion, but, you know, they go back, they're hiding their symptoms, or they're not, you know, aware that perhaps a concussion has, you know, started, and they take that second hit. And that second hit is where, you know, a lot of the sequelae comes from. So always, when in doubt, sit them out, whether you're a trainer, a physician, the coach. You know, if there is a risk of concussion, pull them out, because that second hit is often the one that does the most damage. And then the treatment obviously is incredibly important, and this is where, you know, people such as myself, we kind of specialize. I've probably seen 8,000, I've treated 8,000 concussions in my life, 8,000 and counting. And no two concussions are really the same. When I treat concussions, I think it's, you know, I take the mindset that there's very, very, you know, even though they all kind of fall under the umbrella of you know, traumatic brain injury, they're very, very different in terms of, you know, when you talk about a you know, mild traumatic brain injury, a typical concussion, when you talk about somebody suffering, you know, from, you know, a second impact, when you talk about somebody with what we don't say post-concussion syndrome really much, but we talk about persistent and symptoms.
What's
going on in the brain with those patients, it's much different than, you know, a typical quote-unquote, you know, concussion. And then you get into the whole chronic traumatic encephalopathy population, which again is much different than a concussion and much better than second impact patients and much different than, you know, the persistent post-concussion symptoms. And then you have the people with, you know, the moderate and severe brain injuries, which again, there's similarities with concussions, but again, from a pathophysiological perspective, they're very, very different too. So yeah, it's definitely not easy treating head injury patients, just because it's such a, you know, variable, you know, yeah, contributor out there.
Yeah, no, I've noticed by talking to people, a lot of times, a lot of policy people who've been, you know, suffering concussions and have treat conditions or have like technology that assists with the other mitigation or the treatment of conditions, they all look at different symptoms than whatever I see is like my main issues, that I had a severe brain injury, and whatever I see is my significant problems are not they're similar to concussion, but they're not they don't match up exactly, I see. And
exactly.
Yeah. But yeah, but you're saying about the diagnosis and the Sagnavec syndrome. So that also comes with the Sagnavec syndrome. As you know now, it's just wait, make sure you wait long enough that you're fully healed. But like, there's no definite way to know it definitely unless obviously the wait is not time that we cannot be say that chances are very good that you must be healed now. You feel good and you waited a month or whatever, 2 weeks or whatever. And
Yeah, we don't know when that brain is finally healed, right? And that's the problem. So we go through the guidelines, we go through the return to learn, and then the return to play, knowing that, you know, that there is healing that has to happen in the brain, even, you know, after the symptoms are gone, to, you know, limit the potential of repeat injury. So some people think that, you know, as soon as the symptoms are gone, they're good to go. And that's not necessarily the case, and it's not the case.
Which actually kind of made me, I was wondering with this one, read their paper, the 100S100B blood biomarkers. So do you think blood biomarkers are legitimately, I think they'll be, or is that more of a just, could potentially be like it's a kind of a, we'd like to eventually get there, but we're not there yet.
Well, it's interesting, right? So the blood biomarkers, so whenever you're talking about doing any sort of test, right, you want, the two measures you look at is, you know, how sensitive is the test, right? Meaning that, all right, if you're doing a test to, you know, make sure you diagnose something, you want to make sure that you're not missing cases, right? So that's the sensitivity. And then you want to look at the specificity of the test. So if you get a positive result on a test, you want to make sure that that positive test is actually due to the thing that you're looking at. So if you get a positive biomarker, you want to make darn sure that that biomarker is due to the head injury. Yeah. Now, the problem is with some of the biomarkers is, and I do think there are some that are showing promise for sure. But the problem is, you know, and where my kind of training and my practice is kind of transition is looking at neuroinflammation, right? And so what some of these biomarkers are measuring is looking for neuroinflammation. Now, does the head injury lead to neuroinflammation? 150,000%, yes. Yeah. But there are other things, though, too, that lead to neuroinflammation as well. And can that blood, you know, the blood biomarker, can that differentiate the neuroinflammation that comes from head injury versus neuroinflammation that comes from, you know, being in pain? Pain causes inflammation, you know, stress causes inflammation, right? So, you know, sometimes even dietary changes, right, can, you know, change neuroinflammation. So, you know, it's tricky. And I think what it can do is it can give you an idea that, all right, that this brain is not, you know, 100% recovered. This brain isn't, you know, fit to go back. So I do think it definitely has a place, but it definitely, I think, needs some fine tuning before, you know, widespread implementation of this.
Yeah, because like, as you're saying, even you can't really get a baseline first. They can't say take someone's blood one day and say, okay, that's your baseline because you're fine. But you don't know, maybe they have a slight headache, maybe they changed what they eat, maybe they ate something last night that was unsettling or so. It's hard to say. So, and I said the reason we didn't mention anything but really touch on treatment so much is that who knows? I mean, there's so many different forms, different models of treatment that are possible that we don't know. I mean, one brain injury to the next, as we were saying, it's so different that You may need physio, you may need OT, you may need get surgery, but who knows? I mean, there's just so many that would be in here for hours.
So the treatment is kind of where we step in. And I think, yeah, you do look at, you know, you do look at patients and you know, where are they? Are they the patient with the concussion? Could there be a second insult going on? Is this somebody with persisting symptoms, you know, more than three months? Or is this something that's, you know, a moderate severe brain injury? So the treatments, because unfortunately there's not really and I always tell patients when they come to see me that, you know, there's no, you know, quote unquote, you know, medication for concussion, you know, for instance. But this, you know, I tell patients, you know, I often say, you know, I work at this place called the Brain and Mind Research Institute. And I think it's important for people to understand that distinction, that the brain and mind are different things, right? The brain's kind of like the hardware, the mind is the software. They work together, but, you know, they're different. And, you know, for the brain to heal, the mind has to be in a good place, right? If the mind is not in a good place, then you know, the brain, it's very, very difficult for the brain to heal. So, you know, when I talk about what, you know, treatments, I try to, so at the CHEO clinic, when I was running it at the Children's Hospital of Eastern Ontario, we would have lots of fellows and residents and med students come through, and they would walk out of these rooms, you know, before for us to talk about the cases, and they look kind of shell-shocked, where, you know, we'd see these patients that they've, you know, had a head injury a year ago, and, you know, they're not in school, and they have chronic headaches every day, and they're kind of like, where do we start? And so my approach with head injury is, all right, so you have your head trauma, and there's lots of things that happen. So one thing that happens with a head trauma is you get a concussion, right? And a concussion, in my opinion, refers to the damage to the neurons that you have in your brain. So when I see patients, I'll draw a neuron for them, and I'll explain what happens to the brain when we get a concussion at the neuron level. Yeah. And that concussion, and we talk about, all right, well, there's not really anything scientifically proven that we can, you know, that we can used to treat this nerve. But the good news is that, you know, your brain has an incredible ability to repair neuroplasticity. And, you know, I always say that our brains have been getting concussions for a very, very long time. There is this innate ability to recover after head injury. Now, where we can help, and especially when we see patients, you know, who's been suffering from symptoms for 6 months to a year, we say, all right, let's look at some of the other treatables, right? And Nick, you alluded to it there. So I talk about the extracranial issues with a head trauma. So with a head trauma, you get a concussion. But with head trauma, yeah, you are going to have some neck involvement, most likely, kind of that whiplash. With head trauma, you can have an injury to your jaw. So you can get temporomandibular joint issue. You can have issues with your inner ear, the vestibular ocular system, right? You can have issues with the eye, the post-traumatic visual stress syndrome. So this is something where we can target. And this is where, you know, allied health professionals are key to really help, you know, with the rehabilitation. And then you talk about some of the other influencers of head trauma. So one is, you know, you got to make sure you're eating well. You got to make sure you're staying well hydrated, right? So that's important for recovery, whether you have a mild traumatic injury, you're suffering from, you know, chronic traumatic encephalopathy, or you're having persistent post-concussion symptoms. Eating, drinking well is important. We got to make sure that we're not dealing with any other co-founding variables. So if people have been having symptoms for more than 4 to 12 weeks, when they come to see me, I have a very low threshold to get blood work done. And the things that I've been able to diagnose that, you know, people had just assumed, you know, were concussion symptoms, you know, I could write a book, right? Whether it be, you know, low iron, thyroid issues, mono, you know, arthritis, you know, Lyme disease. I mean, there's so many things that can kind of masquerade as concussion symptoms. You know, it's so important for medical doctors to be, you know, be involved, especially with the chronic patients, to rule out some of these other things. Another thing that I really, really focus on brain recovery is sleep, right? So if we're not sleeping, you know, sleep is like the number two cause of headaches, right? If you're not sleeping, your focus is really bad. If you're not sleep, so sleep, we have to get these people back on a regular sleep routine and sleep habit. And then the other thing that we focus on is, you know, the mental health side of things. I think head injury has a huge, huge impact on, you know, not just the brain, the parts of the brain that control our stress response, but just you look at what happens with head injury and what it does to kids' lives. You know, they have their sport taken away from them, or they you know, their school is, you know, suffering from that, and that causes more stress, and, you know, it causes pain. And so pain is a major,
depression,
you know,
stuff, yeah.
Depression, exactly, right?
Yeah.
So got to treat the patient holistically. And so that I've kind of developed this approach to treating these really complex concussion patients. And it's actually the similar to the approach that they use for patients suffering from chronic pain. So the first is, you know, we try to get as much information as we can. So before patients come to see me, I have them fill out all these forms, and there's a lot, and it helps, you know, help me get to know the patients, you know, as well as I can. And then, you know, we talk about, all right, you know, do we need to get blood work on this patient? Do we need to do a psychoed assessment? Do we need to do, you know, do we need to get imaging on these patients, right? Trying to get as much information as we can. But the approach that I take is it's this 3P approach. So there are three different therapeutic arms. So the psychological treatment, the physio treatments, and then the pharmacologic. And this helps me, you know, kind of organize my thoughts and organize and get a very systematic approach to these patients. So from a psychological perspective, yeah. So for everybody, I say you got to make sleep a priority. You know, I say you got to eat as well as you can. So I always tell patients, nobody likes chips and ice cream more than I do, but you can't live on chips and ice cream. And I also say, you know, you don't want to wait for your thirst reflex to kick in, because if you're thirsty, you're already a little bit dehydrated. So you want to have that water bottle handy. And then what I tell with all my patients is, you know, I want you to abide by these three rules of one. So one act of physical activity every day, one act of mind training, so meditation, mindfulness, right? Just, you know, try to give me 5-10 minutes a day, or at worst, just focus on your breathing three times, you know, for three breaths a day, or do some yoga. I think that's so, so important. I'm learning the value of that, not only in my own life, but in, you know, to help patients. And then the other thing is, and this is very, very hard, especially for kids, is limiting what I call the toxic screen time to 1 to 2 hours a day. And so school-based screen time is not toxic. Family-based screen time is not toxic. You know, FaceTiming friends and family is not toxic. But the TikTok, the YouTube, the video games, social media, you know, anything where you're just scrolling, we're learning more and more how detrimental that is, not only on our brain and our mind.
Yeah.
And then, you know, sometimes patients with all the change in their lives dealing with chronic pain, you know, I think sometimes counseling is needed, right? So that's kind of like the psychological perspective. And then from a physiological, that's the next P in this approach. These are kind of your allied health professionals. So, you know, we want to make sure that their eyes get checked. We want to make sure that they're plugged in with the very best physios or occupational therapies, massage therapies. So, you know, all these things are crucial, you know, for an adequate recovery. You know, a good highly trained chiropractor, these kind of things are, these are the people that are going to do the week to week appointments that are going to, you know, really push these people, you know, in that right direction. And then the third P is the pharmacologic. So this is going to be your supplements and your vitamins. And knowing that, you know, there's no real vitamin or supplement or medication that's been shown to, you know, cure a concussion, but there are, you know, lots of different options out there. And it is really trying to, you know, treat the symptoms. So I always say, you know, the mind is not going to be at peace if your pain isn't handled, if you're not sleeping really well, right? If school's not going really well. So, you know, we kind of hijack some of the migraine literature, and we use either supplements or medications, you know, for concussions that have been shown to work with kids with migraines. It'd be what we considered off label, but there are some options that are out there that I've used with really good success to either help, you know, calm the mind by controlling pain, helping with sleep, you know, those kind of things. So that's my approach kind of in a nutshell. I apologize if I rambled too much. My approach.
No, I was going to say, because like what you said, it was just great, because I mean, this is good to give people the more knowledge, because it's an issue that there is some papers about body checking in hockey, which is similar to, say, tackle football. So it's also not dissimilar, like when you get all the biomechanics and all that stuff, but the same idea of like limiting contact, which is, and also this, the idea is limiting screen time, limiting, say, yeah, those screen time is and mental health issues. So it's more societal. Unfortunately, the concussions are, concussion treatment seems to be very, very societal, as like society doesn't want to give up these sports they love, and they don't even have these great gains in the technology that they've gained and stuff. And they've in mental health has just become an issue recently, and so apparently it was an issue for just ignored. And so it's I think it's yeah. just it's a very tricky area to get these kids like to be able to say like, okay, yes, you should like management like it's in very. I'm rambling here, but I encourage people to read Goulet's, and your co-author is Dr.
Yeah, Suzanne Bano. She's at the Sick Kids, and Suzanne did a great job. So the word count for this paper was supposed to be about 3,500 words. The first draft of the paper was almost 14,000 words. Oh. So Suzanne did a great job of helping me kind of whittle it down. But yeah, there's definitely a whole lot. This what you're seeing with the paper is kind of like the tip of the iceberg.
Exactly. So I encourage you to go to CPSSCA, which is Canadian Pediatric Society, and search the support as we do today now. Sport Lady Concussion. I had it there now. I missed that. My screen's kind of funky. The title is Sport Lady Concussion and Body Checking in Children and Youth. Agile Evaluation, Management, and Policy Implications. So, although I probably said that slurred a bit, but you get the idea. So, search for Goulet and Dr. Dr. I'll read that to you.
Suzanne Bano, yeah, B-E-N-O.
Suzanne Bano. So Goulet Bano, and check out the article. There's obviously implications and suggestions there for what the proper, best management, ideal management can be. But doctors can only work with in society. So these issues of mental health, of screen time, of the contact, collision, non-contact, that's more as a general overall thing that'll just development that will eventually just take place. It's going to take time, and I hope people are obviously get aggravated when they just don't see a doctor and don't get diagnosed they want or get diagnosed they don't want or whatever. But doctors are reacting to in society, so there's only so much treatment they can. It's not a kind of thing. It just fix you. Just you got to work with them and to eat well, sleep well, and to treat these issues seriously if you intend to recover seriously. But if you just want to stay in this part of life and just okay, it's gonna suck and it's gonna suck for a while, then you know just accept that. It's obviously so. That's me preaching now for a bit, but I'll try to limit. I'm limiting my preaching. I will not limit my appreciation for Dr. Goulet or Dr. Christian Goulet. Goulet is like, as I know. And so we haven't, this is our first podcast in 148 episodes of Concussion Talk Podcast. So it's kind of fitting that he's out and not fitting because who knows when I'll stop doing these podcasts. Hopefully, a long, long while. But I mean,
hopefully, you keep doing them. Yeah, it's awesome.
Yes. So, thank you. So, it's been great. I'm catching up with Billy because I haven't talked to him since 2017. He came after that conference here with Hockey Canada conference here in 2017. So, thank you so much, Billy, and our Dr. Christian Billy. And please everyone check out the paper. Awesome. The article. So. Thank you. I gotta stop this.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello? Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.